Yeah, look, it is a big thing, and I'm still doing it, to be frank. You know, we've got a lot of information to work through, a lot of issues that have evolved a lot over that 9-year period. Trevor Mallard has been our sports spokesperson in opposition, and obviously he was the previous Minister of Sport, so I've taken a lot of advice from him. Trevor's very free with his advice, and that's been really useful. There shouldn't be a huge amount of partisan politics in sport, to be frank. I mean, I think it's the kind of issue where New Zealanders would expect whichever party was in power to be, you know, supporting our sporting bodies and supporting recreation and activity. We might have one or two different ideas of how to achieve our goals, but it shouldn't be a portfolio where people see radical changes in policy.
Righto. What I want to do, Grant, if this is okay by you, I think simplifying this for our audience as well is to take you through what I think to be the main sporting issues. I want to start with free-to-wear sport. I want to remind punters of Winston's plea. This was 6 months ago on TV3 about free-to-air sport.
There's about 1.2 million people who can't afford Sky. They're the mothers and fathers that put young kids on sports fields all around this country. I'm not going to say we're going to try and implement it. We will implement it. Everybody that's dealing with Winston Peters and New Zealand First knows we intend, as in the past, to keep our word. We don't stand around making promises we don't keep. We'll deliver.
Right. Now, where I'm confused on this one, Grant, is that we had Clayton Mitchell on the program, as you know, who put forward the private members bill to try and get free-to-air sport on live national television, free-to-air television. He said this was still in play as far as negotiations were concerned. Is it?
Yeah, look, the end result of the coalition negotiations means that we've got some more talking to do, so we haven't committed ourselves to that. It was never, as you know, Tony, it was never a Labor Party policy, but New Zealand First have argued for it, and we're going to keep talking about how we can improve New Zealanders' access to the iconic kind of sporting events that are out there. From my point of view, I want to see as many New Zealanders as possible viewing their sporting heroes in a live format. The reality, as you well know, of the way that professional sport is funded is that broadcast rights are absolutely critical to that and a number of codes in New Zealand. Also, we've got to bear in mind that the times are changing, and whether or not Sky retains the rights for a particular sporting code for a long period of time is in question in some ways. The whole way we view sport is going to change.
Yep.
I suspect we'll see a lot more subscriber-based, internet-based provision of sport where the codes themselves might have a little bit more control over that. So we've got to have all of those issues in our heads while we work this through. So, look, you know, New Zealand First have been really strong advocates for this issue, and I'm sure they'll continue to be so. We haven't made a commitment to go ahead with their policy, but what we have done is made a commitment to keep talking about how we can improve the access of all New Zealanders to watch their sporting heroes.
But with your other portfolio hat on, Minister of Finance here, and Grant, let's be honest, you'll know this and you'll find this in this new role as Minister of Sport. When I try to pitch on the show that money should be spent by the government, by ratepayers, by taxpayers on sport, I get a lot of pushback from punters who say there's more important things to happen. So therefore, let's say you did bring this into policy and put this out to the public, that suddenly $100 or $200 million a year was going to be put out of the public coffers into putting sport on the free-to-air television, there would be a backlash.
Oh, I think they wouldn't. As I said to you, it was never the Labor Party's policy, largely for that reason, that it is a significant sum of money. And we've got a huge number of other priorities for that spending at the moment, you know, housing and health and education and all those really core things. So that's exactly why we haven't agreed to the policy that New Zealand First put up. But that doesn't mean we can't keep talking about what we can do. To answer the other part of your question, yeah, look, I'm of the view that support for sport actually has a lot of benefits in New Zealand, and one of the things that I want to focus on in being the Minister of Sport is how we continue to keep New Zealanders involved in sport and activity and recreation, because it's got massive benefits from physical and mental health, from within our education system it's got huge benefits. So I'm not someone who says that there isn't a benefit out there for supporting sport. just like every other area of government spending, people have got to make their case and make sure that there are genuine benefits across the community. But I'm looking to see in the sport portfolio how I can contribute to New Zealanders living, you know, happy and healthy lives.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get on to that, Grant. I just want to point out a stat that I found out yesterday. This will sum up actually one of the benefits when we do see free-to-air sport. So the Rugby League World Cup, Grant, has now been on Channel 7 free-to-air, which is unusual. Normally it's on Fox. 2.6 million Australians, Grant, tuned in to Australia v England. Now, another 2 million tuned in for Australia v France, which we know is not a powerhouse of rugby league, Grant. But because it's been in good time zones, what it does show, if you put it on free-to-air television, people will watch.
Oh, absolutely. And the reality is that more people have access to free-to-air television than have to pay TV. So that's a natural thing. Look, as I've said at the start, in principle, I want to see as many people as possible being able to view these major and iconic sporting events. But as you've noted yourself, I have to weigh that up against the amount of money that costs and the critical role that the broadcast rights play in the income streams of our major sporting codes in New Zealand. And it's actually more heightened in New Zealand than it is in Australia. If you look at something like rugby league, you look at the NRL, where there are other income streams that NRL clubs particularly have. In New Zealand, we for the big codes, you know, they are really reliant on those broadcast rights. So we've got to be realistic about that. But yeah, look, I grew up, Tony, with one of the highlights of my weekend being the free-to-air sport that I was able to watch on TV1. The world's changed. We've got a lot of professional codes now. We've got to work out how we continue to support those and give people access to view them.
Grant Robertson, Minister of Sport, guys, with us as we rock through a whole lot of issues around the sporting world and his new portfolio role. Let's move on to the America's Cup. This is Stephen Armitage out of ATEED, Auckland Tourism Economic Development Arm, around the America's Cup and what may need to come from you guys, the coffers of government, and also ratepayers around funding of infrastructure for the team bases in 2021.
Council is going to have to seriously look at a contribution, and central government is obviously considering a contribution, but until we know what that looks like, we can't start to look seriously at apportioning costs and what the figures are.
Grant, the money that I have been told through my sources is around about $100 million is going to be needed minimum from both ratepayers of Auckland and taxpayers of New Zealand. Where are you guys at on America's Cup funding for 2021?
Yep, so we're in conversation already with Auckland Council about this, and I think every single New Zealander is incredibly proud of what we've done and want this cup to be hosted in New Zealand and want New Zealanders to have the chance again to enjoy watching it, but also for the spin-off benefits. And you know, the focus for me looking at this is what are the long-term legacies that hosting the cup can leave to New Zealand, and what are the economic development opportunities that we can exploit while the cup's been hosted here. You know, the sport of it is important, but if you're asking, and it comes back to the comment you just made before, if you're asking taxpayers to make a contribution, and indeed ratepayers to make a contribution, we've got to be looking at those economic spin-off benefits and the long-term legacies that left. And we know from the previous hosting of the cup, both of those things happened, you know, in terms of the viaduct and obviously in terms of, you know, the huge number of people who came to New Zealand. So we're actively working with the council on that now. Steve Armitage is not wrong. In order to make this work, we're going to have cooperation between all of the agencies and also, you know, the private sector in Auckland as well.
Yeah, because the thing about this, Grant, the number or the date I've been told is August the 1st next year. The trigger needs to have been pulled by then. So there is not a lot of time, really, when you think about the Christmas period coming up. Decisions need to be made to ensure this thing isn't taken to the backup plan, which we know to be Italy.
That's right. And for me, you know, as I said at the very start, I, like every other New Zealander, want to see this cup hosted in New Zealand. So we've got to work hard alongside Team New Zealand, the council, and you know, all the different arms of central government to make this work. Rest assured, Tony, it was one of the very first briefings that fell on my desk when I came into the job.
It's interesting though, Grant, because when
my
I was...
old colleague Phil Goff up there in Auckland, who's not a shy man, I can tell you that, and neither's Grant Dalton. So, you know, look, we're very well aware of this. There are discussions going going on probably as we speak about it.
Because it's interesting, Grant, I don't think Team New Zealand will mind me saying this, but when I went to the protocol unveiling, what was it, 4 or 6 weeks ago, it was made very clear to me by some of those involved in the hierarchy of Team New Zealand, they felt actually Labour coming into government was a better fit for them, which I found really interesting.
I think we've got the experience with the America's Cup. I mean, that's one of the big issues here. And Trevor Mallard was the team's good luck charm this time round in Bermuda. He was up there and supporting the team. And, you know, I think that's really the thing, is that we've got the history here, that we understand this. I think we've probably, and again, you know, like I said before, I don't want to put too much politics into sport here, but also I think we've got a broader view of economic development, that actually, you know, you can make some investments now that will pay off later. And it would seem to me it's pretty clear that, you know, we know from last time that there were significant spin-off benefits just in terms of all of the people who come to the host city, who spend money. But the other thing for me is that question of legacy. You know, if we're going to host big events, any big events actually, we need to be thinking about what do we leave as a result of that for future generations.
The problem is, though, Grant, is that again a battle I face, and I've had Sir Stephen Tindall on the program, who you might remember commissioned an independent PwC report into the economic benefits that came out of even San Francisco. And we put him on the program, and I think he has a lot of mana and respect in the business community. As you know, people sat back though, and I'd get these texts in, I'm in Gore, I'm in Christchurch, why the stuff should I care about an America's Cup, which is in big city Auckland?
Yeah, look, and if we're making, you know, if New Zealand's making significant returns from that, that money returns to the coffers, and the people in Gore get, you know, new roads and a decent hospital and all of that. So, you know, it all goes around. Economic development happens in different ways, and that's, again, part of the challenge here. It's also, you know, for your correspondent from Gore, why ratepayers need to be making a contribution in Auckland.
Yeah.
And I know that, that's it's not every dollar coming out of central government. I can dead set guarantee that today. But it is about making sure that we've got a decent partnership here. And as I say, our contribution to it will be based on an understanding of what the overall benefit to New Zealand will be.
Just quickly on this, what would be the time frame likely you think we'll have a decision, an announcement from you guys, yes, we're good to go, we're going to green light this project?
Look, you know, those discussions are underway. I can't put a timeline on it, but you've given, you know, some of the dates that are out there around when we need to make a decision. This is a priority decision for us because a lot of work has to go on.
Next issue for Grant Robertson here, the Minister of Sport, who is joining us, guys, as we go through all of these issues, is an issue you raised around pay parity in sport. This is Dr. Farah Palmer, of course, a Blackfern legend on the board of the New Zealand Rugby Union. Her thoughts on how we build on the Blackferns in terms of equity of pay.
Some of these players that have gone over to the World Cup made a commitment to just focus on rugby for 3 or so months, so they've gone to part-time work, or, you know, or they have understanding bosses who give them, you know, leave, but they're fully committed. They, you know, they might be amateur in status, but they're professional in the way that they approach their game, and it would be nice to see that that's being acknowledged in some monetary way.
Grant, we all know that there needs to be a bridging of the gap, but I know when I had the Blackferns in studio a few months ago, they were saying, look, we're going back to a full-time job. They do not have another test match against an international side until June next year, which is against the French. So how do we do that? If there's not a commercial backer here, if there's not a commercially viable competition for them, how do we increase their pay parity?
Or there has to be more, they have to play more games. I mean, that's the absolute reality of this. I think everybody understands that ultimately, you know, this is a decision for New Zealand rugby in many ways. In fact, in all ways, you know, I don't have any particular direct input into what people get paid. What I'm saying, and I think what a lot of other people are saying, is that the women's game globally is really, you know, one of the most competitive parts of rugby. It's a fantastic sport and a fantastic, you know, impetus for young women to think about playing sport and playing rugby, but there needs to be competition. And I'm aware that the rugby union was working on this, and we want to support whatever we can there. But if we can get regular games that are then broadcast, that people go along to watch that are part of a professional competition, then we'll be able to pay the players well at that point. Or we, when I say we, the rugby union and the country will be able to see that happen. What I'm encouraging the rugby union to do is understand that they have a terrific product here, and I'd like to see us as a country celebrate that as much as we can.
What though, Grant, if they did put on, let's say, these international series and no bugger turned up? Now, that is a potential. You know, at the moment, Grant, sporting crowds in this country, we are battling because the home experience is so good. Financially, it's not cheap to go to sporting events now. What if they put on this competition and nobody turns up?
Well, look, I don't think that'll happen, firstly, but secondly, that's a problem across rugby and across other codes as well. I mean, it's the same problem in crowds for NPC and Super Rugby too. So, you know, that's an issue about the experience that that sporting codes provide people when they go along. But I'm absolutely confident that this is a competition. You know, if we can get a competition going, this will attract the crowds. And you know, there are ways of creating a professional rugby environment for women rugby players that are not just about internationals. Remember that, you know, a big chunk of the way that professional rugby works for male players is Super Rugby. So, you know, you've got to build the structures up, build the international program up, and then I believe that the opportunity is there. This is in the hands of New Zealand Rugby. Politicians don't get to make these decisions, and I'm getting some good signals out of New Zealand Rugby that they understand this, that they're working on it. People like Farah Palmer doing a fantastic job. My parliamentary colleague Louisa Wall, former Black Fern, is also, you know, working really hard on these issues. And I think we're nearly there, actually. But it definitely is around making sure there's a sustainable professional rugby competition that can support that.
Would you accept, though, comparing the incomes, which the media are consistently doing at the moment? So, for example, the All Blacks get 7,500 per diems or per diems to be in camp per week with the All Blacks. Comparing their incomes to the Black Ferns, to me, is completely irrelevant because the brand that is the All Blacks generate millions, as you know.
Rome wasn't built in a day, Tony, and so you've got what I think, you know, most New Zealanders are looking for here is a pathway for our women rugby players, our elite women rugby players, to be recognised for the commitment that they make, for the professionals that they are. And no one will expect us to click our fingers in the rugby union to automatically be able to pay people exactly the same. It's a pathway to a sustainable professional role for our elite players that we're looking for, and I'm sure that we can do that.
Grant, hold the line. Grant Robertson with us, the Minister of Finance, but for you guys, more importantly, the Minister of Sport, as we go through a number of the major talking points. We will look at Christchurch in terms of a new stadium. Now, the key thing is here, if they don't get this thing up and running in terms of a build by potentially even the end of next year, you guys that live in Christchurch may be without a stadium 2022, 2023, because the current one will need to be spent a lot more money to keep it up to spec. So we'll talk about that. The report from PwC into Auckland Centralised Stadium, that is out in about 3 weeks' time. Where does Grant Robertson stand on that? And also this issue of alcohol sponsorship and sport. You might remember 3-4 years ago, there was a forum headed by Graham Lowe that came out and said all sponsorship of sport should be clean and clear of alcohol sponsorship. Now, that was put to bed by National. Where does Labor stand on that? Do they believe that is a fair and reasonable policy because it is influencing our children, our futures? People, as we know, have a problem with drink in this country. More from Grant Robertson next.